Chapter 6. Ron Williamson was well aware of the Haraway case. He had the best seat in the house, a bed in the Pontotoc County Jail. After serving 10 months of his 3-year sentence, he was paroled back to Ada and placed under house arrest, a rather loose arrangement that severely restricted his movements. Not surprisingly, it didn't work. Ron was unmedicated and unable to keep track of time and dates or anything else. In November, while living at home, he was charged with willfully and wrongfully having been sentenced to confinement with the Department of Corrections for the crime of uttering a forged instrument, and while on house arrest status, did escape from such status and confinement by leaving his house during a time not consented to by the DOC. Ron's version was that he walked down the street to buy a pack of cigarettes and returned home 30 minutes later than expected. He was arrested, jailed, and 4 days later charged with the felony of escape from a penal institution. He made a pauper's oath and requested court-appointed counsel. The jail was buzzing with the Haraway matter. Tommy Ward and Carl Fontenot were already there. The inmates, with absolutely nothing to do, talked and talked. Ward and Fontenot had center stage because their crime was the most recent and certainly the most sensational. Tommy described the dream confession and the tactics used by Smith, Rogers, and Featherstone. The detectives were well known to his audience. Tommy insisted over and over that he had nothing to do with Denise Haraway, that the real killers were out there laughing at the two stupid boys who confessed and the cops who tricked them into it. Without the body of Denise Haraway, Bill Peterson had an enormous legal challenge. His case consisted of the two taped confessions, with absolutely no physical evidence as a foundation. Indeed, the truth contradicted virtually everything on the tapes, and the confessions clearly contradicted each other. Peterson had the two sketches of the suspects, but even they were problematic. Arguably, one favored Tommy Ward, but no one had suggested that the other drawing even remotely resembled Carl Fontenot. Thanksgiving came and went with no body. Then Christmas. In January 1985, Bill Peterson convinced a judge that there was sufficient evidence that Denise Haraway was dead. During a preliminary hearing, the confessions were played to a packed courtroom. The reaction was generally one of shock, though many noted the glaring discrepancies between Ward's account and Fontenot's. Nevertheless, it was time for a trial, with or without a dead body. But the legal wrangling went on and on. Two judges recused themselves. The search lost steam and was finally called off a year after Denise disappeared. Most of Ada was convinced Ward and Fontenot were guilty. Why else would they confess? But there was also speculation about the lack of evidence. Why was it taking so long for a trial? In April 1985, a year after the disappearance of Denise Haraway, the Ada Evening News ran a story by Dorothy Hoag about the town's frustration with the pace of the investigations. "Unsolved violent crimes haunt Ada," was the headline, and Hoag summarized both. On Haraway, she wrote, "Although authorities have searched many local areas, both before and after the arrests of Ward and Fontenot, no trace of Haraway has ever been found. However, Detective Dennis Smith said he is convinced the case is solved." The alleged confessions were not mentioned. On the Carter case, Hoag wrote, "Evidence found at the murder scene and evidence concerning the suspect were sent to the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation Laboratory less than 2 years ago, and the police said they are still waiting for results." The backlog at the OSBI was noted. Dennis Smith said, "The police have narrowed their focus to one suspect in the case, but no one has ever been arrested in connection with the crime."